In the annals of criminology, some crimes have magnified to mythical proportions simply because the perpetrators have never been caught. We think of London's Jack the Ripper, LA's the Black Dahlia, and in the San Francisco area, the Zodiac. The old Wild West had a whole family of killers. People knew who they were, but due to the times and geography, they managed to disappear, change identity, and have become legendary criminals. In today's episode of the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast, we'll look at the story of the Bloody Benders. Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I'm Steve, your host. Just after the Civil War ended, it was a time of expansion west, and one of those trails was through part of Kansas. To accommodate settlers, the United States government moved the Osage Indians from Labette County in southeast Kansas to the new Indian Territory and what would later become the state of Oklahoma. The vacated land was then made available to homesteaders, who, for the most part, were a group of hard-working pioneers farming the area's softly rolling hills and windswept prairies. The Bender family were immigrants to the US, although there are no official records of the Benders' origins. Some say Germany, others say the Netherlands. The family consisted of 60-year-old John Bender Sr., who spoke little to no English and had a very heavily German accent. His wife, 55-year-old Elvira Bender, who also spoke heavily accented English. Their son, 25-year-old John Bender Jr., who spoke fluent English with a slight German accent, and their 23-year-old daughter, Kate Bender, who spoke the best English with barely an accent at all. In the autumn of 1871, John Sr. and Jr. laid claim and registered 160 acres of land adjacent to the Great Osage Trail in Kansas. At the time, for that area, it was the only open road that allowed for travel to the west. The two men built a cabin, which was divided into two rooms by a canvas wagon cover. They also built a barn with a corral and installed a well. The cabin consisted of living quarters at the back, and the front acted as a general store where the family sold dry goods, a kitchen, and a space to allow travellers to rest, relax, take in a meal, and spend the night. It soon became known as the Bender Inn. Once the property was built and established, Elvira and Kate joined the rest of the family. They planted a vegetable garden with an apple orchard near the cabin, which provided sustenance for the meals they offered travellers, as well as fresh produce to sell in their store. A sign was hung above the front door that advertised groceries to the many travellers along the Osage Trail. The little store carried a few supplies such as powder shot, groceries, liquor, and tobacco. They were considered a very strange family in their small homestead community of Labette County. The elder John and his wife were said to be extremely unfriendly and gruff, one neighbour even calling Elvira a she-devil. The younger one, John, was considered charming and handsome, but was also found to be smiling and laughing to himself, to which many of the neighbours considered him a half-wit, but tolerated his eccentricities. He was easier to deal with than his parents. The star of the Bender Inn was Kate. She was young, beautiful, charming, and very friendly. Many of the newly established homesteads in the area considered themselves spiritualists, but Kate took things a little further. She claimed to be a healer. She often advertised her services and supernatural powers, claiming she could cure illnesses. She also conducted seances and gave lectures on spiritualism. Kate was what really drew travellers to the Bender Inn. However, the family weren't exactly who they said they were, according to rumours. Apparently Elvira Bender wasn't who she said she was. It was claimed that she was born Almira Hill Mark in the Adirondack Mountains. She was also claimed that she married multiple times and had up to 12 children. Rumours were of her murdering several of her husbands, although they've been mostly unproven claims. It's also claimed that Kate was Elvira's fifth daughter, and she was born under a different name. There were also rumours that Kate and John Jr. weren't siblings at all, but husband and wife. Again, most of these rumours were left unproven, but they do add a lot of colour to the Bender legend. These rumours didn't seem to make it to their neighbours before strange things began occurring around the Bender Inn. Between 1871 and 1873, a handful of men were found with their skulls crushed and their throats slit in Drum Creek. The owner was known to be suspicious, but no action was ever taken due to lack of evidence. Some of these men, who frequently carried large sums of cash with the intentions of settling, buying stock, or purchasing a claim. When friends and family began looking for them, they could trace them as far as the Big Hill County of southeast Kansas before sometimes finding no trace of the lost traveller. These first few missing travellers did not raise an overall alarm in the area, as it was not uncommon for men to continue their journeys westward during these days. However, as more time passed, the disappearances became more frequent, and by the spring of 1873, the region had become rife with rumours, and travellers began to avoid the trail. Things seemed to take a turn in the spring of 1873. George Newton Longcore and his infant daughter, Mary Ann, were last seen leaving Independence, Kansas, in the winter of 1872. They were resettling to Iowa, but no one heard from them after the departure. Concerned about not hearing from his friend, Dr. William Henry York decided to go looking for the Longcore family. He took the trail that Longcore would have taken and questioned homesteaders along the way. On March the 9th, he sent word from Fort Scott that he intended to return home to Independence. He never made it home. Dr. York had last been seen by his brother, Colonel Ed York, who lived and worked at Fort Scott. He'd sent word to their other brother, Alexander M. York, a member of the Kansas State Senate, who lived in Independence, that he was returning home. When neither brother heard from Dr. York again, they started an all-out search for him, Colonel York enlisting a group of many men, and they questioned everyone they came across about his missing brother. He also visited every homestead in the area. On March the 28th, 1873, Colonel York in the company of another man, made it to the Bender Inn. He told them about the situation at hand and asked them, "Have you seen my brother?" The Benders admitted that they'd seen him, but they weren't all that helpful. They told him that if his brother had gone missing, it's possible he'd ran into some trouble after they left her inn. Colonel York believed them, for a time. But after he left the inn, he ran into a peculiar woman with a story to tell. She informed him that the Benders weren't what they appeared to be. She told him about the rumours. She also told him about her own experience. She told him that Elvira had threatened her with knives and knew far more English than she claimed. The woman had fled, and the Benders threatened to kill her if she ever returned. Colonel York went back to the Bender Inn and levelled these accusations at the family, and Elvira became absolutely enraged. She yelled and screamed that the woman was lying, that she was a witch and had cursed their goods and their store. Colonel York had had enough. But as he made to leave, Kate asked him to return alone the following Friday night, and she would use her clairvoyant talents to help him find his brother. Colonel York smelt foul. He certainly did not return. The men in his search party wanted to round up the whole family and hang them there and then, convinced they were up to no good. But Colonel York wanted hard evidence of wrongdoing, but highly suspected that something sinister was going on in and around the Bender Inn. At the same time, the news of all the disappearances were unsettling all the neighbouring communities, especially with Colonel York looking for his missing brother. The Osage Township arranged a meeting at the Harmony Grove Schoolhouse. It was attended by Colonel York and 75 locals, which included the men of the Bender family. During the meeting, it was decided that a search warrant would be issued in order to search every single homestead between Big Hill Creek and Drum Creek. Colonel York wanted the Bender Inn to be the first place searched. For several weeks, he had expressed his suspicions about the Bender family. No one had laid their eyes on the Bender Inn after it was declared that systematic searches would take place. And a few days later, a neighbour who was driving cattle noticed that the property wasn't looking very well. Many animals were roaming around unfed, and the garden and the orchard weren't being tended to. The Bender Inn had been abandoned. Though it was reported, nothing could be done for several days due to inclement weather. When a search party, including Colonel York, finally made it out to the Bender Inn, they found the cabin empty of food, clothing, and personal possessions. A foul odour was also noticed. Following the trail of the odour, the search party found a trap door hidden in the cabin. Ominously, the door had been nailed shut. The party pried the door open and found a small basement cavern. It was clotted with blood. Breaking the door down, the search party found nothing. It was determined that the smell was coming from the blood on the floor that had seeped down and soaked into the soil. Convinced that something nefarious was happening, the party decided to keep searching. They physically lifted the cabin, moved it to its side, and dug under the cabin where it had stood, but they found nothing. The search then expanded. The party began searching the grounds near the cabin, expanded towards the vegetable garden and the orchard. They found some upturned earth and inspected it further. What they found was the body of Dr. York, buried face down with his feet barely below the surface. The search party continued, going around, probing the grounds further. As it was approaching midnight, the party decided to take the rest of the search in the morning. They'd already marked several areas they believed to be graves. In total, 10 bodies were found in the Bender's apple orchard, including Dr. York and the people he'd been searching for, Mr. Longcore and his daughter, just 7 or 8 years old. More gruesomely, although the little girl's bodies was found to have multiple injuries, none of them would have caused death, and it was speculated that the poor lass may have been buried alive. Of the discovery of her remains, the Kansas City Times reported, "The little girl was probably 8 years of age and had long sunny hair and some traces of beauty on a countenance that was not yet entirely disfigured by decay. One arm was broken. The breastbone had been driven in. The right knee had been wrenched from its socket and its leg doubled up under the body. Nothing like this 6 series of crimes has ever been recorded in the whole history of the country." Other bodies found in the garden were those of Henry Mackenzie's mutilated remains, 3 men by the names of Ben Brown, W.F. McGrotty, and John Greery, as well as an unidentified male and female. John Boyle's body was found in the well. Dismembered parts of several other victims were also discovered, but could never be identified. 4 other bodies with crushed skulls and slit throats were also found outside the property in Drum Creek and on surrounding prairie. Quickly, the word got out about the bloody Benders. Soon LeBec County was overrun with reporters and tourists alike. The cabin was destroyed, souvenir hunters clambering for a piece of the bloody homestead. But as the news was spreading, the county had a major problem. The Benders were gone, and they had multiple murders on the property. It was believed that the Benders initially planned to steal from the guests who stayed at their inn. They surmised that Kate would lure the weary travellers in, make them sit at the table with their backs to the canvas. Then Kate would begin to charm the men with her social skills, flirting, or revealing her psychic gifts. As the men gave full attention to the alluring Kate, another member of the family would bash their head in with a hammer from behind, rendering them incapacitated and then pushing them through the trap door. Someone else would finish the job by slitting their throats in the cellar in order to make sure they were dead. Then the family would loot them for goods and valuables. Many witness accounts corroborated these assumptions. A man named William Pickering stated to the authorities that he felt uneasy when he came across the Bender Inn. He didn't want to sit near the canvas, and when he said so, Kate threatened him with a knife. Thankfully, he managed to flee before any harm came to him. 2 other men stated that Kate became very aggressive towards them when they too refused to sit near the canvas. As she yelled at them, 2 men jumped from behind the canvas. The men felt uneasy and promptly left. It was heavily implied that Kate was the mastermind behind the serial killings. She was certainly the most social, the most outgoing member of the family. She could woo people, entice them to stay at their inn. She procured the victims, and the rest of her family conducted the murders and the pillaging. With all the evidence at hand, investigators now had an arduous task on their hand. They had to find the bloody Benders. Investigators followed wagon tracks that led away from the homestead. They found the Bender family wagon abandoned. The horses attached were near death and starving. It was apparent that the Benders had been gone for days. The wagon was found near the city limits of Thayer Canvas. Witnesses who were interviewed managed to positively identify the Bender family as having passed through. They told investigators that they bought trains on the Leavenworth, Lawrence and Galveston Railway for Humboldt. Following that lead, investigators then discovered that two Bender siblings left the train and caught the MK&T train. They were headed south towards Denison, Texas. From there, it was rumoured that the siblings travelled to a border region between Texas and New Mexico. This was considered outlaw territory, and the investigators decided not to pursue them. It was known that lawmen following outlaws into this region often never returned. After this, the trail of the Benders ran cold, although there are an abundance of rumours. And this is where fact and fiction clash, and there's no known answers. One rumour claimed that John Jr., who was actually a man called John Gebhardt, died at the outlaw colony of a stroke. Another claimed that John Sr. and Elvira did not leave the train with their children, but kept on going north to Kansas City. From there, rumour stated they caught a different train for St. Louis, Missouri. For decades after their escape, vigilantes, detectives, investigators, and many others kept up the search for the Bloody Benders. But there was one huge glaring problem. How do you find anyone when you don't know their real identity? The only lead that they had were Elvira and Kate, the only two that were likely blood related. Somehow, it was discovered by investigators that Elvira was actually Almira Mark and Kate was her daughter, Eliza Griffith. As previously stated, Almira had married multiple times. It was rumoured that many of her husbands were found dead with mysterious head wounds. Over the years, a mother-daughter pair were often seen travelling through the US. Many suspect them have been the woman Benders. These claims have never been substantiated. John Bender Sr. was rumoured to be a man called John Finklinger. He had emigrated to the US in the early 1800s, either from Germany or Netherlands, explaining his heavy accent. It's unknown how these four people found each other and decided to commit murder on their homestead, but they did. It was reported that in 1884, someone by the name of John Finklinger committed suicide in Lake Michigan. Another rumour stated that a man was arrested in Montana for murder. This man fits the description of John Bender Sr. A message was sent to the authorities in Kansas requesting someone been sent for identification. But before the investigator got there, the man had severed his foot to try and escape his ankle shackle and bled to death in his cell. By the time the investigator got to Montana, the body was too badly decomposed for identification. It's heavily implied that this man was one of the Bloody Benders. A few years later, in 1889, two women named Almira and Sarah Elizabeth were arrested for larceny in Michigan. They were accused of being Elvira and Kate Bender. At the time, many women who were travelling in pairs and appeared to be mother and daughter were arrested, accused and released. Investigators didn't want to pass up the chance of apprehending an infamous Bender. The two women were transported to Kansas for identification. Despite the similarities and uncanny names, the panel meant to confirm their identity provided inconsistent results, and the women were released. It was estimated that the Benders' loot from the killings amounted to $4,600, two teams of horses and wagons, a pony and a saddle. It's been 150 years since the Bloody Benders reigned terror over Labette County, Kansas, whilst their horrendous acts of homicidal violence were rooted in facts. What happened afterward is nothing but rumour and conjecture. Like the Jack the Ripper case, it leaves a myriad of unanswered questions. Were the two women arrested in 1889 the Bender women? Did Flinklinger commit suicide in a lake? Was he arrested in Montana? Did Gebhard die in an outlaw colony? We will probably never know. But the legacy lives on, and the Bender Museum was created in Cherryville in 1961 in honour of the Kansas statewide centennial celebration. An exact replica of the Bender cabin was built that housed antiques and household items. In its first 3 days of opening, it attracted more than 2,000 visitors. In 1967, three of the Bender hammers were gifted to the museum. The museum remained a popular tourist destination until it was closed in 1978 when a fire station was built. Although many wanted to relocate the building, it became a controversy in Cherryville, with locals objecting to the town being known for the Bender atrocities. In the end, the artifacts, including the hammers, photos, newspaper clippings, were placed in the Cherryville Museum and can still be seen today. Well, that's it for another episode of the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I hope you enjoyed that one, and I do promise it won't be so long till the next episode. And it's thanks to Cat's True Crime Corner. Thanks, Cat. And until next episode, bye-bye.